Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hello, lovelies, and welcome to another edition of LGBT in the Ring, your rainbow bastion for all things pro wrestling. I am your host, Brian Bell, here with you once again on the Outsports Podcast Network, and we have a fun and interesting one in store for you today. Of course, Journo January continues with our guest today, one Harley R. Paget. The co-host of Grit and Glitter, as well as a contributor with Pro Wrestling Torch, and someone who has dedicated a good portion of their time in wrestling media to covering wrestling specifically from women and other marginalized genders as well. So we get into a lot of Grit and Glitter talk, a little bit of a Pro Wrestling Torch talk, and just, you know, a bit about Harley's journey into wrestling media and what he has really gotten out of that experience. We also delve a little bit into some recent gender exploration with Harley as well, and so much more here on the show today. Before we get to the interview, though, it's obviously been a fairly eventful week in the world of pro wrestling, really for some of the very worst reasons. Obviously, you know, as I'm sitting here recording this, it's been roughly a little over 24 hours since the untimely and tragic passing of Jay Briscoe. Plus, you know, we had the news with Amari Miller this week as well, and, you know, continuing to pour out love for Kevin Nash over what he and his family have experienced in recent months as well. And it's just, these things are never easy, obviously. But Jay has really taken precedent in recent days just because of, you know, the circumstances of his death and, you know, what he meant to so many people in the pro wrestling world, both wrestlers and fans, promoters, and pretty much anybody that has any connection to pro wrestling have very strong feelings about Jay Briscoe, myself included, you know. And obviously this has kind of brought back up the whole ordeal with his past homophobic comments. And I plan to explore this a bit further in written form at some point, whether that's this week or next week. But I just want to take a small moment here to kind of talk about this for myself, because I am a Jay Briscoe fan. And for a number of years, I had to kind of rectify that with what he said. And it left a lot of sour taste in my mouth. And, you know, obviously he put in so much work, both publicly and privately, to grow and learn and improve as a person in terms of how he viewed and related to the LGBTQ community, to our community. And so much so that, you know, a number of queer wrestlers and queer people in the wrestling industry, as well as queer fans, you know, noticed it and gave Jay his due. It's really something we don't see in pro wrestling or the wider like combat sports arena, honestly, to see people be called out on their bullshit and then recognize that what they said was extremely hateful and denigrating to an entire community and actively want to learn and be better, you know, for himself, for his family, for the people around him, for the people that he works with in that way. You know, we've seen comments from Indra Kabani. We've seen comments from Effie. We've seen comments from so many people that are either part of our community or are very close allies of our community point to the work that Jay put in there. And we'll put Warner Brothers Discovery and all the stuff there aside. Like, I don't want to get into like the fact that they didn't have the chance to really celebrate him on Dynamite this week. But all of the work that Jay Briscoe put in to make good with our community should be celebrated and should be recognized. It should. It definitely should. I agree with a lot of people that have been voicing that thought in the days since. But at the same time, just because I chose to forgive Jay Briscoe does not mean that other people within this community that still feel hurt, that still internalize that hateful language and the, you know, the incitement to violence that was in those comments as well against our community. Every single individual has to decide for themselves whether they want to forgive or not. This isn't a question about cancel culture. This isn't a question about you know, this idea of not being able to come back from these sort of things. But rather, I'm mainly responding to this because I've heard so many other people in the wrestling media sphere kind of talk about like, well, why hasn't everyone forgiven Jay Briscoe, and really kind of going in on people that haven't, that don't recognize that, and throwing the same cancel culture motif arguments that we've seen for years at this point. Let me tell you why queer people may not be the quickest to forgive that kind of language, honestly. Look at what we are currently dealing with right now in terms of how our community is treated by the general public. It's very much in line with what Jay tweeted a number of years ago at this point. Look, as I've said previously, I am proud of the growth that Jay showed and how he learned and changed from those attitudes. But the fact is, those attitudes still exist. And for people that revered Jay Briscoe at the time, to see someone that they hold so high spew that stuff, it can leave an impact. It can leave a scar that doesn't go away for a very, very long time. It doesn't. Especially considering that sometimes in our day-to-day life, we had that scar opened up over and over and over again by so many other people. I mean, for fuck's sake, trans identities are threatening to splinter the United Kingdom right now because of how people are continuing to demonize and ostracize and straight up call for the eradication of trans and LGBTQ, the greater LGBTQ community, not from society, but from this planet. Okay. There's a lot of hypervigilance in our community. There is a lot of increased defense of self in our community. We have to do so much just to feel comfortable in spaces where most people do not even have to take a second thought about whether or not they are safe in that room or that area or that sidewalk or something. Okay. So that is why I do not begrudge anybody that hasn't forgiven Jay for what he said. And I'm not saying this to like come across as like angry or anything like that. I think I'm just very emotionally raw because of the moment, because, you know, I haven't tweeted about this. I haven't spoken to anybody really about this in any depth. I've kind of just held this all in for the past 24, 36 hours, however long it's been at this point, since I learned, like the rest of the world, about Jay passing. But I just want all of y'all out there that do not have the lived experience of queer people to understand the mindset that queer people are coming to with this. And it's not to say that they don't recognize the growth of Jay Briscoe, but it is to say that trauma is real and these things don't just go away overnight. They don't go away because the person got better. You know, it is a long and lengthy process, and it is an individual process for every single person out there. All right. Like I saw people that are still like struggling with what he said, talk about how much they love Jay at the same time. You know, there is no lack of love for Jay. I just want people that are talking about this and continually pointing to fans, whether they be from our community or allies of our community that haven't gotten over that hump, to just take a second, look at the perspective of those people and understand that, you know, whenever you were reminded on a daily basis of how people want you dead, sometimes those words linger longer and they cut deeper. All right. And I don't want this to dominate the entire conversation around Jay Briscoe on this show, because obviously Jay Briscoe was amazing, but I had to let that out. And, yeah. Rest in peace, Jay Briscoe. And yeah. Well, please enjoy my conversation with Harley R. Patchett. What's up, guys, gals, and non-binary pals? Welcome back to LGBT in the Ring. And I'm very pleased to have as my guest this week one of the co-hosts of the Grit and Glitter podcast, as well as someone who's done some work with the Pro Wrestling Torch and has been a guest on this show not too long ago, honestly. Please welcome back Harley R. Patchett. How are you doing?
Hello, it's me. Welcome back to me. Kicking off, into the year 2023.
Yes, an already eventful year in many different ways for pro wrestling, but that's not what we're here to talk about per se today. We're here to talk about you, because like we're in the midst of Journo January here, and you know, you've become a pretty interesting and forward-thinking voice, along with the rest of your compatriots there at Grit and Glitter, in terms of how to cover pro wrestling and topics to cover within pro wrestling there. And I'm excited to kind of talk with you a little bit about your journey in wrestling media and just pick your brain a little bit, since you pick so many others' brains from time to time.
Oh, and I'm excited to not have to do any editing or any post-production when this is done. I get to just chat, and then when we're done, we hit stop, and I go walk away and I make dinner, and you do all the work.
Exactly. I'm doing everything here. That's another joy, I think, that I that is kind of a secondary thing out of these interviews, is that, like, you know, the people that I talk to, especially for, like, the people in media, like, once the interview wraps that you're conducting, like, there's so much, like, back end work that goes into these things too. And it just weighs on you. I know it weighs on me.
Oh, I go through, like, if maybe not for like a weekly episode, if it's like a quote unquote typical episode, where it's just me and Em chatting about what happened at the pay-per-view this weekend or something like that, I might do a little bit less work. But if we're doing an interview with like a bigger name, somebody that I'm really excited about, I want the finished product to sound as good as possible. I want it to stand that with Grin Glitter, our podcast, like, we go into every episode wanting it to stand the test of time, wanting this to be listenable years from now. Whereas so much wrestling podcasting is ephemeral, right? It's like, oh, we're talking about what happened on Dynamite and Raw this week, and we don't expect anybody's going to listen to this 4 days from now. It's old news by then. But we really strive to make our episodes interesting enough and like time capsule-y enough so you can go back 3 years from now and listen to it and it still sounds interesting. So when I interview a wrestler or a referee or whomever, I get obsessive in the editing stage. Like, I'm going through 5 seconds at a time, re-listening, and I'm trying to cut out any little silences, any ums, any uhs, anything like that, to make them sound as coherent and smart and wonderful as possible so that they sound the best that they can. I'm like, that's the least I can do since, you know, they're giving us this time out of their schedule.
No, exactly. And I could say, knowing that process myself, I could definitely appreciate the work that goes into that. And also, I feel like, especially like how y'all pattern your interviews and the idea of producing episodes that do kind of like stand the test of just the weekly pro wrestling grind that can be revisited is one of the reasons why I'm drawn to Grit and Glitter personally, and I think why a lot of other people are too at this point. So yeah, I'm right there with you. And I do want to talk to you a little bit more about Grit and Glitter, but I always feel like it's good to start kind of at the beginning with these type of episodes, especially with new people that are solo to the show here, like yourself. So talk to me a bit about where your love of pro wrestling comes from. Like, where did that seed get planted for you?
Right, because you see these tweets go around sometimes from accounts where they're like, what was the first wrestling show you attended? What was the main event of the first episode of Raw that you ever watched? Who's your first favorite wrestler? And I'm like, I don't know. I've been watching this stuff since I was like 2, since I was like 3 years old. Like, I could not, first favorite wrestler, Bret Hart, because born and raised in Canada in the 90s, you know, like I was 11 when he was doing the anti-American gimmick, and like all of Canada was worshiping at his feet at that time. So I can answer that question. And I remember like thinking Adam Baum was really hunky when I was younger, something about the long hair. I was just like, wow, that guy looks so cool. But beyond that, it's like, yeah, I've been watching since I was 2 or 3 because of my dad. My great aunt took my dad to wrestling shows here in Toronto at Maple Leaf Gardens when he was like a kid or a teen, and he got hooked on Maple Leaf Wrestling, which was the big promotion in Toronto at the time before WWF bought them out. And so he tells me about going to shows and seeing the original Sheik and guys like that. So he just watched wrestling pretty much his entire life. And as a result, it was in the house on when I was on. I remember watching, you know, Raw started when I was 8. So I wasn't watching Raw when I was like 5 or 6, but I was definitely watching like Superstars. I have distinct memories of being like 10 years old, and the WWF Superstars 1 hour recap show would air at noon on Saturdays. So I would take like my Saturday morning bath around like 9:30, 10 a.m. Then I'd watch like like Doug or Marsupilami or Ghost Rider, something like that. And then into wrestling. And then once wrestling finished, out the doors and running around the neighborhood with my friends. But yeah, I can't tell you the first house show that I went to or the first merchandise that I wore, any of those things, because it's just been part of me my entire life. And it's never, I didn't have any spells either in my teens or 20s, even when I was like ashamed to be a wrestling fan and like nobody outside my dad knew that I watched wrestling. I still stuck through it the entire time. It's been in my DNA from day one.
That's really interesting, actually, because I feel like so many people, even that have such a fervent passion for it, do have those like year to 2 year at least like blocks of their life where they just kind of tuned out from pro wrestling as a whole. Like I know for myself that was like around like 2003 to 2005-ish personally. But no, that's really interesting. I think you might be one of the first people that I've kind of spoken to that did not have or mentioned that they did not have a break point there for a little while.
So it's in Canada, it was always WWF, WWE. Like Nitro only started touring up here in the late 90s, like right like their last 2 years of existence. I don't think WCW aired that prominently, whereas WWF, Raw, SmackDown was on like the main sports channel here, TSN, the sports network. So it's always been a very WWF town up here. So I was in with them from day one, from a kid, and stuck with them until, I don't know, maybe 2015-ish, whatever the Authority era was. That era where every single episode of Raw opened with a 25-minute Triple H Stephanie McMahon promo. That was what finally killed it off for me. Like that was when I was like, I can't do this anymore. And luckily for me, I had found Ring of Honor a couple years earlier, again, by chance. So in Toronto, we get the Fox 29 feed from Buffalo, New York. And they would have the 1 hour ROH television airing Sunday nights at 11 p.m. And I think I just found it by chance one night when I was awake at 11 p.m. looking for Seinfeld reruns and finding, oh, hey, here's wrestling. And wait a minute, I think this is the company where CM Punk and Daniel Bryan came from. So I started watching ROH. And so luckily for me, when I lost interest in WWF finally at like age 27 or something like that, I already had something else to like keep that wrestling going.
No, I mean, it's good to have something that you can really latch onto, especially as one product starts to really not serve your needs in terms of what you want as a viewer. I want to talk a little bit more about Ring of Honor because obviously that has through lines to you like going to the torch. But before we get there, I have to ask, as you know, someone who was born and raised in Canada and was a very strong pro wrestling fan during those Bret Hart years, the whether it be previous to the anti-American stuff in 97 or in that era as well. Like we always hear in the States about how like Bret Hart is viewed in Canada as like this Canadian hero. And I'm just curious to ask you, like, how true what is that like for, was that for yourself or for like the people around you? Like how, what was the extent of that?
So it's still wrestling, right? Yeah. Like I still, I'd imagine if I asked everybody at my work, my day job, like, do you know who Bret Hart is? 99% of them are going to say no. 99% of them aren't going to know who Brock Lesnar is or who Roman Reigns is or Chris Jericho is, probably, right? It's wrestling. Like nobody's heard of these people.
Yeah.
But within the world of wrestling, finding a Canadian who doesn't like adore Bret Hart or who wasn't alive in the 90s and doesn't adore Bret Hart, I feel like that would be pretty hard. Like the arenas at that time when he showed up, it was unheard of. It was like insane the reaction that he got, seeing this homegrown guy, seeing the perpetual, like as great as he is, like an underdog, because he was never Vince's number one. He was always like, oh, I prefer Sean, I prefer Hogan, I prefer whatever. I guess I'll settle for Bret if I have to in these like brief windows, that sort of thing. But Yeah, we drove to like a flea market, like an hour and a half to a flea market in maybe 98 or something, because he was doing an autograph signing and we waited in line for like an hour and a half to meet him. And I got his autograph
Wow.
photo. And I also have an autograph photo of Owen after he came to a local video store near my house when I was like 12 or something, maybe. Yeah, and it was his King of Hearts face. So I might have even been 10, but I met two of them, which is pretty cool.
That's pretty dope, honestly. Well, obviously there's a fandom there for yourself. You find Ring of Honor. At what point do you start kind of looking at the wrestling media landscape as something that you want to participate in?
So I'm a wrestling fan my entire life. And when I'm a kid, that's cool. All my friends are into wrestling. All my friends and I, my Pakistani friend, my friend from Estonia, my Jewish friend, my Black friend, we all love wrestling and Pokemon and Looney Tunes and Weird Al. Common interests. And that's in high school where things fall off, and all of a sudden I'm the only person who watches wrestling. And then in my 20s, I still keep it to myself because of all the stereotypes associated with pro wrestling by that time. I have my head, if I tell somebody that I like wrestling, they're going to think like I'm a redneck, I'm a dummy, I'm whatever. I don't want to have that conversation. So I just keep it to myself. It's this thing that I'm obsessed with. I watch hours and hours of wrestling every week. I read the Pro Wrestling Torch. I read these other websites, like getting all the scoops. I fantasy book in my head 24 hours a day, but where's this storyline going? What are they going to do with this storyline? The only person I have to talk about it with is my father. I don't know what any other people in my life who like wrestling who I can talk about this with. So the Pro Wrestling Torch, especially, which I think was from my father. I don't remember when I started reading the Torch, but I do know that my dad, I think, has a couple old print Torch fanzines from back in the day, like when Wade Keller was starting out, in a box in the basement somewhere. So my dad had been a Torch reader before me, and he really liked Wade and respected his opinions. He'd like to read his Raw recaps and see what he thought about different angles and stuff. So I want to say I started reading the Torch through my dad, and for years and years it was my only lifeline. I wasn't on Twitter, I wasn't on social media at this point. I had nobody who I knew who watched wrestling. So it was my only connection to like the wrestling landscape and the wrestling community for so long. And I never really thought that I would be a part of it. But one day by chance, I see Wade Keller post saying that they're looking for somebody who to do weekly written reports covering ROH television. And I thought, okay, why not? I have a Bachelor of Arts in English. I think I can write. I've been watching ROH for like 7 years now. I got the free time. So I sent him an email, and he ended up joining the team as a writer doing weekly written reports for the Torch. And within like 2 weeks of me joining the team, he says, "Oh, by the way, we're starting a weekly NXT podcast. Would you want to be a part of that? It's going to be a roundtable podcast talking about NXT." And I thought, no, because I had a speech impediment when I was a kid. I couldn't pronounce hard R's, which really sucks with my name. Like whenever my mom would try to introduce me to people, they'd be like, "Oh, what's your name?" And I'd be like, "Holly." And I hated that. So I would just clam up and not say anything. And I kept that with me all of like my teenage years, especially. I was just racked with like crippling self-esteem issues. I got over the speech impediment as a kid, but I had the usual like teenage self-esteem issues, like I'm too skinny, my nose is too big, why don't any girls like me? Things like this. And I would be nominated for leadership camp by teachers who saw something in me and thought like I'd be a good leader. I have these skills in me. And I always declined. I always said, "No, I just want to hide in the back of crowds. I want to be in the back of groups. I don't want to be visible. I don't want people to look at me." So I never thought about like doing podcasts or anything like that, like putting myself out there and being like a voice on a thing. It was never anything I aspired to at all.
That's really interesting to hear, honestly, because it is hard, really, really hard to put yourself out there in that way, especially having like that sort of stuff in your past and already having like this idea of yourself kind of formed in that way. Like, I know I've gone through similar challenges, still do go through similar challenges at times with that, in terms of whether I feel like I am like the best to do this, or like, why do some people have the faith in me to be able to do this certain thing versus like what I internally feel about myself. And, you know, I think it's important to challenge those notions for sure. Obviously for growth and for like trying new things and that sort of thing, but it doesn't make it any less of a challenge at all.
Yes. So he asks me if I want to join this like roundtable podcast talking about NXT. And I think that was the difference maker, right? It's like, oh, so roundtable. There's like four of us. One week would be three of us. Next week would be a different three of us. All you have to do is log on to Skype and just chat about the 1 hour NXT episode we just watched. I can do that. Like, that's whatever, you know, I can talk about wrestling for an hour. And okay, maybe this could be fun, because like I said, I've never had anybody to talk about wrestling with. I haven't had anybody to talk with about like wrestling with since I was 10, and I'm like in my late 20s now. So, okay, let's give that a shot. And it turns out pretty okay. And then like within a month, he's like, okay, now do you want to host your own weekly Ring of Honor podcast? And I was like, okay, I guess I'll give it a shot. Do I want to? No. Will I? Okay, I guess. But the nice thing again is like, Wade has always been just so hands off and just like free reign. He's like, okay, cool. Yeah. If you want to host your own weekly like Ring of Honor podcast, that's it. Just do it. Send us a show or upload it. No restrictions, no like guidelines about this is what we're looking for. This is what we're aiming for. You let me choose my own co-host. And I knew that the wrestling podcast, wrestling media landscape is dominated by cis straight white men. So right away I was like, okay, so I'm going to actively try to find a female co-host to come on do this with, because that's the least that I can do to try to amplify some other voices in the mix.
No, and I will say you found a really awesome one in the form of M Fear. I'm curious to ask like how you found M to be your co-host.
Again, pure dumb luck. All of this, the key, my number one key to success, folks, pure dumb luck.
It's a huge key for a lot of people.
I started the ROH podcast, which we called Talking Honor. I did about 2 months of episodes with one woman, and then she ended up dropping out, just saying like, I've got other things on the go, I can't commit to this, I don't want to prioritize this, there's other things I'd rather prioritize this, so that's fine. And then I just found M tweeting about having attended the recent set of ROH TV tapings in Pittsburgh. And so I sent a DM to this random person that I'd never met before and said, would you want to come on the show and just talk about what it was like being at the live show? That sounds fun. And we clicked instantly. Like, honestly, like in that, we did one episode, just, it was her first time ever doing a podcast. I'd only been doing it 2 months. And after one episode, I was like, do you want to be my permanent co-host? Because that was just like effortless. And then as we get to know each other, it's like, oh, hey, we're born like a month apart. Like, I'm February 1985, you're March 1985, you're a librarian. I spent my entire life wanting to be a librarian, and then at the last minute getting an English degree instead of a library sciences degree. We have similar tastes in music. We both like are really passionate about the same types of wrestling. We have like similar sense of humor. It's like, this is perfect. Like, this is like, and now it's how 5 years later, and you know, the ROH podcast, we retired because we got tired of ROH. We decided to start a podcast focusing on women's wrestling instead. But none of that would happen. Like, none of that lineage would have occurred. I wouldn't be here talking to you today if I hadn't met M. I'm sure if I had found like any other person, honestly, to be my co-host at the time, I don't think it would have lasted the test of time. I don't think we would have created everything that we've created now, because it just, I don't have, I haven't found that synergy with anybody else in wrestling.
I mean, it's always good to find a partner that just clicks like that instantly. Like, I feel like that's always the story that you hear with any duo or a group, whether it be like it really in any form of like media broadcast, like you have to have that relationship there. And I will say that it's awesome that y'all did click so easily and that you did happen upon her tweets. And she's still out there tweeting a lot about what is going on with what she's seeing out there. You mentioned like the show, you know, kind of running its course and y'all transitioning away from talking about Ring of Honor to focusing more on women's pro wrestling and kind of the star of Grit and Glitter there. Like, I've heard on previous episodes of your show, like talking about why that transition happened and kind of just being uninterested in what Ring of Honor was presenting after some time. Like, knowing how much both you and him really focus in on women's wrestling in particular, and now the show obviously covering women and also other marginalized genders as well, like, did that first kind of like pitfall of Ring of Honor's women's division kind of play into that decision at all to transition away from Ring of Honor specific?
Yeah, for those who weren't there, 2019 Ring of Honor was abysmal. Just frustrating on every aspect. Remember, this is just after AEW started. So they started the year with losing the Elite and Best Friends and SCU and Brandy and Britt Baker, a lot of people at the same time, which is fine. They got some other people that brought them in. But there are a lot of just like people getting low blowed like five times on one episode, like referees looking dumb. And the women's division, that was a constant focus point for us, much like it is currently with AEW. We'd watch every week and we'd say, why are we getting so few women's matches? Why are they being treated exactly the same way each week? Why aren't they being treated like with more respect? Why don't they see that they could be doing more? Why don't they embrace intergender wrestling? What is the problem with these sort of things? And so we ended up dropping ROH even before the whole fiasco with them firing Kelly Klein while she was a women's champion and complaining about concussion protocols and all that. We had dropped it a couple of months before then because we were just like, we're just not having fun anymore talking about this. And why are we devoting an hour, hour and a half each week to podcasting about something that we're not enjoying? Wouldn't we rather talk about something that we do enjoy? And we briefly thought about doing a weekly Beyond Wrestling podcast or a weekly Stardom podcast because we were really into those two at the moment. We settled on just like women's wrestling in general because we also realized like it's so much more freeing for us to be able to just talk about not one specific promotion. We can talk about any promotion we want that week that's making us happy. We can do interviews with women and non-binary people of all marginalized genders and all capacities as well. We can interview wrestlers, we can interview people who make gear, we can interview people who design merch, we can interview referees and commentators and promoters and all these different people who are doing really cool things in wrestling. That freedom was just so intoxicating and inviting, right? Not being tied down to, we're talking about this 1 hour weekly TV show each week. It's like, this week can be whatever the hell we want it to be.
No, it's definitely freeing. I could definitely understand that, especially considering like how easy it is to kind of get locked in whenever you're in like that weekly sort of like show review style of a presentation, because like that just, I'm trying to imagine it for myself now. If I had to talk about the exact same show every week, like I don't know how long I could honestly keep that interesting for myself. And if you can't keep that interesting for yourself, how can you really convey any kind of like interesting point about it to the people that are listening? You know?
Yeah, we didn't. And because of our experience with ROH, we didn't want to get locked into, we're going to do this new podcast talking about this other promotion. And then 2 months later, we're just not having fun with it anymore. All of a sudden they've done like a new angle, or they've brought in somebody new that we don't like, and they're being pushed to the top of the card. And now, oh God, now we have to talk about this every week. Like, no, like when we started Grit and Glitter, we thought we're going to be really thorough, and we're going to talk about all of like the top women's wrestling stories and all the different promotions. And within 2 months, we're like, you know what? I don't want to talk about WWE, because it's like, I don't like what they're doing on Raw right now. I don't like what they're doing on SmackDown. I don't think they're really serious about this women's division stuff right now. And so we had the luxury of deciding we're not going to do that. Let's focus more on these other things. It was arguably a different show when it started, because we were really focused on the big companies there. And I wasn't watching much independent wrestling at all, really. It was only maybe a year in that all of a sudden we're focusing largely on independent wrestling and queer pro wrestling and smaller American indies and things like that in a way that I hadn't anticipated when we started, because I wasn't plugged into that stuff. But Grit and Glitter has really been that avenue to plug me in and make me more aware of these different things and help me find wrestling that excites me in a way that the big companies usually aren't.
No, I mean, that's one of the specialties about the independents, is that like there's so many different styles of presentation and so many different people, you know, looking in different regions, different cities, that it's very easy, I feel like, to find at least like one or two people or promotions that you can really feel a connection to that can keep that fire kind of going a bit. So like, I completely understand that aspect of it. Was there any particular independent that really kind of grabbed you during that phase of like whenever y'all started to transition away from like just talking about like, you know, the women's divisions in major companies and kind of refocusing on the wider scope of pro wrestling?
At first I'd say no, because I wasn't watching any one promotion consistently. I was more just like jumping around and watching, following wrestlers or hearing about a match and seeking out a match, things like that. Even today, I'm more about that. Like, I tend to follow wrestlers more than I follow specific promotions. There's like maybe three promotions now where I watch like every single show from them, and that's Enjoy Wrestling, PW Vibe, and Women's Wrestling Army. Those are the only three where I like don't miss a show. There are other promotions I really like and respect, and I'll try to check in as much as I can, but I don't go out of my way to make sure that I don't miss them.
I mean, those are three pretty solid choices, honestly. So it makes sense, especially considering like some of the talents that they do feature there. Like, you talk about following specific wrestlers, like, was there any specific wrestler that kind of caught your eye during that transition as well, that kind of has stood the test of time for you?
See, when we started Grit and Glitter, I was all about Stardom. And then just like with ROH, within a year, I soured on Stardom, and I kind of fell off with them too. Not for the same reasons, but just for the reason of like, here's three wrestlers that I love and I think they're the best in the world. And oh, okay, they're never going to be main eventers here, and they're never going to get titles here, and we're going to focus on these other people instead that I'm bored by. So it's tough. Yeah, the early changes so often, and I can't recall when I got into certain wrestlers. You know, I can't tell you when I first discovered like my favorite wrestlers. Now I don't remember their first matches or anything. It's a hard question for me.
Well, I mean, who is that for you now? Like, who are your favorites now?
Now, so yeah, everybody on the Enjoy roster. It's Ida Surreal, it's Erica Lee, it's Ziggy Haim, I love Haiyan. She doesn't come up with this area as much, or like traverse on the same shows as those people, but she's great. I love the Outfielders and Kings of the District. I feel like these are obvious safe picks. Who doesn't love these people, right?
But that's the thing. It's like, there's a reason why they come to mind, and they are like kind of people that a lot of fans have kind of really latched onto, and because do exciting stuff.
I got an answer to your previous question. The first, Allison Kay.
Ooh, okay.
AK. I remember, I think I knew her briefly from Impact, but it was when we were starting around the Grit and Glitter era that she really landed on my radar more so. And she came up here. I met her twice at independent shows here in Toronto. And so she was probably like my first real like independent wrestling love, where I was like going out of my way to watch an indie show if I knew that she was on it.
Okay. No, I mean, she's outstanding and has definitely continued to show what she's capable of in the years since. Like, I can't argue with that pick, honestly. Not that this is a chance to argue who our favorites should be or anything like that, but no, Allison's yes. awesome.
My favorites are Tessa Blanchard, Ronda Rousey.
Oh Jesus. All right. Well, we're just gonna end the show here. No. God help us. I'm so glad that there are so many other people that we can lift up in the pro wrestling world at this point.
All right, Jens, thank you so much for tuning into LGBT in the Ring. We'll get right back into the thick of things, but I do want to take a pause real quick and say thank you to some amazing people that make this show as rad as it is. Starting off with Daniel Quasar, the Progress Pride Flag designed by Daniel Quasar is a product of Progress Initiative. You can find out more at quasar.digital. A big thank you to Sarah in the Safe Word for the show's theme song, Formula 666, off the album Red Hot and Holy. You can find them on Twitter at STSWBand, and you can check out their music on both Spotify and Bandcamp at sarahinthesafeword.bandcamp.com. Check out independentwrestling.tv for the best in current and classic independent pro wrestling, including live events from top independent promotions worldwide. You can use our promo code LGBTRingPod or visit tinyurl.com/IWTVLGBT and peruse their entire library over there at independentwrestling.tv. Once again, promo code LGBTRingPod or go to tinyurl.com/IWTVLGBT. Check out that service. You can follow the show on Twitter at LGBTRingPod. You can follow me on Twitter at WonderboyOTM. And if you're into video games, definitely check out my video game news show, the Mr. Video Game Super Show. I co-host that with Twitch streamers Slacker Kite and Lady Merowin every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific over on twitch.tv/DeadSunEntertainment. It's your weekly roundup of gaming news, and it's always a blast. So once again, check that out every Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific over at twitch.tv/DeadSunEntertainment. Sun like the star. We'll be right back with more LGBT in the Ring.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
So when did you start to feel like Grit and Glitter kind of found its voice, so to speak? Like, you obviously, you and M have a really great working relationship and are hitting all cylinders there. When do you feel like the show is starting to meet that similar level?
It was definitely when our team started to come together. So when we started, it was me and M co-hosting every week. But we knew that we wanted to have a team of correspondents who would come on and join us occasionally. We actually started this on Talking Honor, the idea of having a team of correspondents. And it was straight up me stealing the idea from The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. I just thought it was really funny how they had like Samantha Bee and they had Lewis Black and other people in different roles, and they would come on and they would have like a different subheading or different, you know, a different title each time they came on. And so we started that with Talking Honor, and I knew we wanted to carry that over to Grit and Glitter. And so we'd have people on and it'd be like, okay, this person's going to come on. They're going to be our Impact correspondent. And they watch Impact every single week and all the pay-per-views. We don't watch it all that often. We check in here and there. So they'll be our expert. They'll come in on for the pay-per-views and they'll talk about Impact with us. This person will come on. They'll be our Joshi expert, and they'll educate us about that and also plug in on things there. And when Grit and Glitter started, we had a couple of people here and there. We had Andy and Charlotte, we had Emily Pratt, we had a few people who'd come on here and there. But during the pandemic, like once COVID really hit in the early 2020, is when the team really started to take on more shape, because there was less wrestling to talk about as well. Remember, during like that, the spring of 2020, the summer of 2020, there was very little independent wrestling. A lot of things were shut down. We had less stuff that we could talk about. So we leaned on our team even more to be like, what are we going to do for the episode this week? There's no new wrestling to watch. What are we going to talk about this week? And that's when people like Valerie Quartz and others really became integral to the team. And the Glitterati really came to be a force. And since then, we went from having like a couple of guest stars who'd come on here and there to being like a team, a strong team of eight people who help us decide the future of the show, who help us plan out what we're going to do on upcoming episodes. And once we got to the point where we had episodes that Em and I weren't on, I was like, we found something here. Like, I can take this week off and the show will be okay. We can trust these other people to do the interview and to do this talk segment without us being involved at all. And things are still going to run smoothly because we found this diverse voice, this diverse team of people who like are all passionate about this, all passionate and smart and like funny and fun to listen to.
And I can imagine like having such a diverse group of people to pull from when putting shows together, like definitely widens the perspective, not just from like what you're talking about or what you're covering, but also like in terms of like a cultural lens that you can put on different things, like talking about like stuff from the perspective of, you know, different genders, different sexual orientations, different, you know, even down across like racial lines as well at times. Like you can open up larger conversations about just like how good was the Impact show or how good was the Ring of Honor show versus, you know, really kind of drilling down on a lot of interesting topics that pro wrestling coverage doesn't really give the time or chance really to delve deep on.
Our team has shifted and changed over the past couple of years. You know, we've had some people who were members in the past and they stepped down because they either weren't feeling wrestling at the moment, they just wanted a break from wrestling in general, or other life, other responsibilities get in the way. And so they step down, we find other people to come on. But the past year, year and a half, even through some roster changes, like our team has become overwhelmingly queer, non-binary, we have asexual representation, we've got all sorts of people from different states, I'm the only person from Canada, most of the rest of the team is American, but people from all over, people who really love these independent promotions, people who do watch WWE still, things like that. And it's funny because it's like, we never set out with that as our goal. We never said like, we really want a really queer team. That wasn't like the mission statement when we started Grit and Glitter. It just kind of happened that way through chance, either because that's just the friends that we attract or because that's the circles that we travel in, I guess.
I mean, as pro wrestling has really started to open its doors a lot more, or have those doors kind of bashed down by some people in terms of, you know, really accepting queer representation within it over the last number of years, like, it doesn't necessarily surprise me that a show that wants to take a different focus on pro wrestling would attract people who also might have a different focus of pro wrestling, but didn't necessarily apply it because it's not something that historically pro wrestling has really given them the chance to do. So like in that way, it sort of kind of makes sense that your team would kind of come together to represent viewpoints on pro wrestling that haven't really been represented in the wrestling media scope for a long time, if ever.
Yeah, I mean, Em wasn't a wrestling fan for most of her teens, or like she was a wrestling fan for a year or two, I think, in her teenage years, but then fell out of it because like it wasn't a friendly atmosphere for a young woman. Like wrestling in the 90s, especially with all of the bra and panties matches and the suckets and everything else, like not a great atmosphere for that sort of thing. So if our show can provide that sort of clubhouse feel for other people who feel like, well, you know, I don't want to listen to a bunch of like middle-aged straight dudes talking about wrestling. I don't want to listen to Bully Ray and Matt Hardy talk about pro wrestling or whatever. Like I can listen to people with a different viewpoint on this sort of thing. And especially because we never talk about Roman Reigns or about even, you know, we love Heyman Page and John Moxley. We don't talk about them either. We focus specifically on wrestlers of marginalized genders and people of marginalized genders in different wrestling fields as well, trying to find those people who aren't getting talked about on the big stages, who aren't being featured on the big podcasts. What can we do to elevate them? And also just because like, it's just exciting for us. Like we would much rather talk about a Billy Starks match than we would Lacey Evans or whomever is wrestling on SmackDown this week.
So talk to me a bit about the decision to take the show independent, because like obviously you and Em have been working with the Torch for a while with Talking Honor and Grit and Glitter for a while, but then the announcement came that y'all were leaving the show was leaving the Torch and y'all were going independent. Like what factored into that decision for y'all?
Yeah, that was a bit of an internal discussion between us. One of us was really thought that we should go off on our own and do our own thing and that we would survive. One of us was more afraid that that we'd be losing a platform, that we wouldn't, it would be a struggle for us on our own. I didn't know if we would make it on our own, having our own, our being completely independent on our own. But the main thing, like I said, the Torch had like no ground rules for us, no restrictions of any kind. We could do whatever we want. We could curse. We could talk about anything we wanted. They were really supportive in that sense. But then at the same time, they were also completely hands off in every sense, where they, you know, they didn't really promote us very much. We were on the website, but they weren't promoting us. We weren't being invited to guest on the big shows on the website. We didn't know how much they were really providing us in terms of like support or sponsorship, but they were putting a decent amount of advertisements on each episode, to the extent where we had some listeners tell us that it was almost unlistenable, having to listen to like a 3-minute ad break constantly throughout our episodes. So that was the main selling point for us, honestly, right there, was if we go independent, we can make sure there's no ads. We can post it whenever we want. That was the other thing, is they had us on like a Tuesday, like your episodes were up on Tuesday, but some weeks it'd be 8 a.m., some weeks it'd be 9 p.m., some weeks it'd go up on like Wednesday morning instead. There wasn't that consistency. Since we've gone independent, it's like every Tuesday, 6 a.m. Eastern, the episode will drop. You can count on that, because I'm very punctual, obsessive about that sort of thing. So those are the two main reasons right there. We're like, we have no ads. We can control when it goes up. We can do bonus episodes if we want. 1 week, we can do 2 episodes instead. We can do whatever. Just that freedom of having like complete say over our future. That was really it though, because otherwise they were totally supportive and they never restricted us or anything. If we wanted to do a week where we weren't even talking about wrestling, like during the COVID era, we did a couple of weeks where we didn't talk about wrestling. We just talked about what was going on in our lives, because it was such a hard time for everybody. And again, they were very supportive of all that. They never like complained, hey, talk more about wrestling. Hey, make sure you do some Raw discussion soon.
I mean, that's good to hear that they were as supportive as they were, but like, you know, I can definitely see taking things and putting it in on your own plate, so to speak, like being something that would be even more freeing than what you were already like trying to do. It feels like a lot of like your desire to like work in the space really boils down to like having the freedom to do what you want to do in a lot of instances, and cover wrestling the way that you and Em and the greater team there with Grit and Glitter want to cover it.
Like we don't get paid for this, you know. We don't have sponsors, we don't have ads. We have a Patreon, which makes, you know, X amount per month. Some of that goes towards covering the podcast hosting fees. And then the rest of that just goes back into independent wrestling. Honestly, like we take whatever's left over and we use it to sponsor independent events. We sponsor Wrestlers Lab, we sponsor Enjoy Wrestling, PW Vibe, different promotions like that. Like,
I believe y'all were a sponsor on Cascadia. So
I believe so. Like, we don't, Em and I don't make a cent from this. Neither do our any of the people on our team. We just do this because like we love it and it's like a fun hobby. That's all it boils down to. So if we're not making any money from this, if we're not like answering to anybody, we sure as hell better be having fun. We better be able to just like do what we want, talk about what we want. And when it stops being fun, we'll probably stop doing it. But it hasn't stopped being fun yet because we keep connecting with like new people and building communities and finding other people outside of our team, connecting with people like you and with like other quote unquote content creators and just being part of this community. That's what it comes down to now, right? Because I circle back to what I was saying before, which was I spent all of my teens, my 20s being obsessed with wrestling and having nobody to talk about it with. And now I have like, and now I have like friends, like real. Sorry. Now I have like a community, which I needed so badly for so long. I had in my 20s, I had a community through my local music scene. I ran a grassroots all ages events group. And we put on concerts and craft fairs and public games, things like that for years. And I had that community in real life, in real space in my suburban city. And then after a couple of years, that fell apart because people moved away and bands broke up and whatever. And then for many years, I didn't have anything. It was just like me alone, reading my comics, writing my zines, wishing I had friends. So getting to this point now, it's like I have friends and I feel like I'm part of a community. Are we the most listened to wrestling podcast? No, not by any means. I am no Sean Ross Sapp. M is no Dave Meltzer. We don't have that kind of following, but we have a couple. We don't know how many. We don't even look into that, but we have people that who like us, who listen to our show. We have people who vote in our awards, people who like want to come on our podcast. We've gotten to connect with these people. Like, we've gotten to befriend these wrestlers that we love so much and do little things that we can to elevate their careers. If anything that we've done from our podcast has helped make Eat a Surreal like a slightly bigger name, or The Runway, or, you know, if anything we did, like if having Roxy on our show one time, it was a little tiny, 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 tiny factor that helped her get a little bit bigger, that helped her sign with NXT and become champion. Amazing. Look at what we've done. Like that we found this community.
I mean, that's pretty powerful stuff there. I feel like community is always something that we want to seek out, and when we do finally like have it and is consistent in that way, like, yeah, like, I don't know, I can just seeing, like, you know, obviously listeners can't see the video feed here, but like just seeing like the emotion on your face when talking about that, like that's what this is all about. Like, it's about creating communities where people can feel empowered. It's about creating spaces for people to feel comfortable to be themselves and to talk about the things that they love. And I mean, I'm just sitting here in this hotel room talking to you. Like, that is an amazing thing to have, and I'm very glad that you found that through this wild journey.
That's the thing. I'm up in Canada. I'm in Ontario. You're out in Oregon. Em's in Pennsylvania. We've had people on the show from England. We cover wrestling from Japan. Like, this is, it's crazy that we can do this, that we've been able to make friends with these people. I only met Em in person for the first time a month ago after recording together every week for 4.5 years. And it's like, even though we had never met in person before then, I still thought of her as like one of my closest friends, because through the magic of the internet, through the magic of all of this sort of thing. it's so cool. And I didn't have that from, I've had many hobbies in my life. Like I published zines for many years. I ran my own independent record label. I wrote children's novels, but they're all insular, solitary hobbies. I'm at home by myself writing. I'm at home by myself assembling cassette tapes and mailing them out to people. So even though I never felt like I had the voice or the presence to be a radio host, the fact that I stumbled into it by chance turned out to be like life-changing, because now I have friends and I have people that like I can talk about this thing that I love with, and I can make more friendships and build something that'll just continue to grow and spread love and friendship and happiness, hopefully, in some small way.
I mean, it definitely does. Like when I talk to other people that listen to the show, or just anybody that's associated with the show, like that is a vibe that I get, that same vibe of community, that same vibe of like, you know, passion about what you're talking about. And sticking on that kind of topic of community as we start to wind down here a little bit, I did want to ask you, like, there's a reason why you're on the show, like not only just because like you do great work with Grit and Glitter, but also because like, and you can tell me how recent of a development this is for yourself, but you know, I saw that you recently posted gender diverse pronouns for yourself, and you know, that's obviously it's so small, but it's also a huge like step for people on that kind of journey for yourself. Like, what kind of has anything really like influenced this idea of your own like gender identity for yourself in a way, or is this something that's been kind of part of you for a while? Like,
it's hard to say, because like it's one of those things where I wouldn't have had the language 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Honestly, like when we started Grit and Glitter, we branded as a women's wrestling podcast, because the term non-binary, I hadn't heard that often before. It wasn't out there. I wasn't hearing that. I think the first time we had like one non-binary wrestler cross our radar, we're like, oh, that's cool. Hey, there's something. And then every year you start to hear more and more names coming out. So my whole life I've been like, oh yeah, I'm a cis male, I guess, right? Like that's the language that I have. I'm not like the stereotypical like man that you see in TV commercials and ads. You know, I don't check off those boxes that all the men love beer and men love sports and men love, that's not me. So what does that mean? I don't know. I guess I'm just, yeah, I'm obviously still working through it, because like I'm stammering here. I don't really know how to answer that question. I'm still working it out. At the end of the day, like I think of myself as a man. Like it feels okay, I guess. That's the thing, right? Like I feel like if I say something otherwise, then I'm a fraud. But I don't know. Like in my head, I tell myself, people who are trans, people who identify as non-binary, they know. Like I tell myself, like, oh, they're like 100% rock solid. They know that they're this label, that's what defines them. And I don't feel that strongly.
And I mean, I guess like that's where like terms and labels can kind of like do a disservice at times, because like, you know, I, similar to you, like I did not have like the knowledge of just the language about this sort of stuff until like around 2015, and like that does a lot of heavy lifting whenever you do finally like have this language and kind of internalize it and think about it for yourself. But even then, like I personally view like gender definition as like much, obviously it's much more of a spectrum, but it's also a very fluid thing that is up for ourselves personally to identify for us in that way. So like, whatever you do, like look at like, well, am I non-binary? Am I trans? Am I gender fluid? Am I something like that? Like it kind of creates a box that you feel like you have to fit into, when in actuality, like, this is something that I picked up from my spouse. Like whenever I was like kind of coming to my own decisions about my gender identity, is like looking at non-binary is just a catch-all. Like looking at non-binary is like a header, and then everything else kind of falling underneath it, and not getting so tripped up on that in a way. And I'm not like sitting there trying to like coach you into something or anything like that, but just like, you know, like these things are like very intense thoughts and that don't just go away, and they like sit there. It's like, well, how do I see myself? How do I define myself in that way? You know, and it is also, like I said, it's fluid as well. Like just for an example, Shea McCoy, you know, for the longest time used they, them. And then recently last year, I believe, like, you know, just said like, no, I'd rather use she. Like, it's all about figuring out where you are, and it doesn't have to necessarily be like the same over an extended amount of time.
Yeah, I think I still have ingrained in me this idea of like, oh, it's X, Y, or sorry, you gotta say Z, X, Y, or Z in my head. I still think of it as like, well, I'm either this or I'm either that. And it's like, no, because it's not one or two, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10. It's like, am I one? No. Am I 10? Maybe not. Am I 4? Sure. Okay, maybe I'm a 4. Maybe I'm a 3. What does that mean? What's the term for that? I don't know. So I'm still, yeah, I guess I'm still working through that for sure. I don't, yeah, that's what, yeah, I sound,
I was going to say working through it.
I sound incoherent here. I realize, I apologize.
No, you're totally fine. I was going to say, like, working through it is a perfectly fine place to be, you know. That's a perfectly fine place to be with these things. And I say that as like a, you know, a statement of comfort for you, but also just for anybody else listening, going through this stuff, these things as well, because, you know, it can be just haunting, like just figuring out a way to like view yourself in and of itself could be a thing that a lot of people don't necessarily want to face. So like in that way, like being comfortable with not knowing everything in the moment is always a good thing to just continue to understand that it is perfectly fine, and to have people affirm that for you.
I will say I'm always a late adapter. I was the last person in my friend circle to get Facebook. I was the last person to like get like an iPhone. I'm always, whenever something new comes along, I'm skeptical. And I'm like, oh, it's just a trend, and it'll be gone in a couple of years, about anything. So yeah, there is that, I think there is that voice in the back of my head being like, oh, you can't call yourself non-binary. You can't use like they, them. Who the fuck are you to do that? Like, you're not really non-binary. You're not really whatever. Like, you doing that is just like posing, or it's just like co-opting. It's taking away from like the real people who are actually non-binary, and it's like not fair to them. It's like appropriation, and you can't do that. You can be like a friend of the community, you can be a quote-unquote ally, but like you can't call yourself that, because like you're not really that. And maybe that's true, maybe that's not true. I don't know. Is there a BuzzFeed quiz I can take?
I mean, if I knew that, I would have probably figured out myself out maybe a little bit earlier. I don't know. But regardless, also, I don't know how much I would trust a BuzzFeed quiz to tell me about myself, to be frank.
I choose my favorite color and my favorite food, and then which fictional character I am. And then you just tell me. You just tell me where I am on the spectrum. Boom, easy.
God, I wish it was that easy. No. Regardless, though, you know, I am very obviously happy to welcome you onto the show, considering that we are so focused on that community. And I really hope that you, not necessarily, I don't want to say that I hope that you continue, but like I hope that you really, what's the right word I'm looking for here? I hope that this journey for you to kind of figure out like exactly like, you know, who you are and how you like place yourself along that spectrum is a positive one for yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to just have the confidence to figure out where I am and stick to it instead of worrying that if I call myself this or that, then other people are going to judge me or think I'm a fraud. Cause I think that's where I'm still stuck. I think I'm still stuck in that phase of, oh, you're an imitator. You're not really.
Well, it's always a no judgment zone here with you, Harley. This has been really fun to kind of sit down and chat with you about your journey in wrestling media and get to know you a little bit more, especially because I feel like there's a lot of like bleed through whenever it comes to LGBT in the ring and grit and glitter listeners. So I'm sure that the window into a little bit more about Harley R. Padgett is greatly appreciated there too.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. We really think of this show as being Grit and Glitter's sister show, in that we cross over a lot, but we also talk about a lot of different things as well. So I think it's a perfect pairing.
Exactly. I have the same thought process about Grit and Glitter in the show as well. Very, very close siblings that like to do their own thing.
Yes, we'll see you at Easter, and in the meantime, go do your own thing.
Exactly. Harley, this has been a lot of fun. Let everybody know where they can find you online and where they can check out and support Grit and Glitter.
I'm on Twitter at Your Echo Heart, and we are on Twitter at Grit Glitter Pod. We're on Instagram at Grit Glitter Pod, Patreon at Grit Glitter Pod. All those sources, follow those places, because one of our news resolutions was to hit 1,000 followers on Twitter. So we could use the boost wherever people see fit. And yeah, new episodes every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts, just search Grit and Glitter. We've got a bunch of stuff coming up in January and February, interviews with referees and commentators, and coverage of different independent promotions. We'll be covering PW Vibes Braumatica events, maybe a special Valentine's Day episode, all sorts of good stuff coming your way.
Well, I will be excited to check it out whenever it does drop in my podcast feed. And definitely everybody, if you're not following Grit Glitter on Twitter, definitely go do that. That is just a thing that you need to do from my own desk to you. Harley, again, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Brian.
My thanks once again to Harley for coming on the show and you know, being so open and honest about, you know, their journey in wrestling media, their other journeys here, and all the work that he and Em do, along with the Glitterati, do with Grit and Glitter to cover aspects of pro wrestling that don't get covered by other outlets out there. Yeah. Well, that is going to do it for us this week. Before we go, real quick, shout out to Pride Style Pro Wrestling. Over the weekend, I got to go down to Vegas and check out one of their shows live for the first time. Amazing stuff. Whenever and wherever their Across My Heart event from this past weekend goes up online, definitely check it out. It's just a whole lot of fun with a crazy main event with Papa Yase and G Sharp. Can't be missed. That's going to do it for us this week, though. Until next time, y'all stay messy. Wash your hands. Wear your mask. Get vaccinated and boosted if at all possible. Same goes for monkeypox. And just one more time, rest in peace to Jam and Pew, Jay Briscoe. Bye. Everybody's ready to die. They didn't see it coming from the top of the bridge. She made a deal with the demon so her lover could live. But the moon is high.